Good morning, wherever you are. Welcome to the first day of February 2020 broadcast of Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead. And as always, that's me. We're coming to you with the miracles of modern technology and the magic of 21st century broadcasting through the renowned studios of Radio 1490 WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut, USA. We're also streaming online to all four corners of the world through WGCH.com anywhere. My friends, it's been anything but a typical Chinese New Year season. We've got a lot to take care of, and so without any further ado, let's get started.
Coming up on today's show.
On the eve of the Chinese New Year last week, fire ripped through a building where the Museum of Chinese in America stored the vast majority of its collections. Now, as the museum is set forth to celebrate its 40th anniversary and recovers from last week's fire, we're featuring an encore broadcast of excerpts of a conversation I had in 2016 with its president, Nancy Yao Mazbach. You'll hear about the Museum of Chinese in America, located in New York's Chinatown, its ongoing mission, and you'll hear also about how you can help at this challenging time. Now, we're also going to have news of events going on in conjunction with Chinese New Year, and we'll have all that and more. So please don't go away.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead on Radio 1490 WGCH.com anywhere, and now on 105.5 FM, Stamford, Connecticut, USA. Contact me anytime by email at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Learn more about the show at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com. Can't listen in real time? Well, we understand, and we've got you covered. All of our shows are freely available through the news blog on podcast.com, soundcloud.com, and the shows and hosts section of WGCH.com. You're invited to support the show in any amount through our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com. Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead broadcasts to the world every Saturday morning starting 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. As always, thank you for your interest and for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to extend my sincerest thanks to the following for making the 1st of February 2020 broadcast possible today. Catherine Laudnier and Mr. John Mickey Robinson, Sue Hill McClanahan, and Kevin M.J. O'Connor of the Jeffrey Matthews Group, and listeners to the Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead show on Radio 1490 WGCH, FM 105.5 in neighboring Stamford, Connecticut, and WGCH.com anywhere, live streaming globally over the internet. We have a GoFundMe campaign, and we welcome your support, and we also would love to have you advertise with us as well. Please contact me at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Again, that's radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Xie xie. Thank you. Thank you, Sharon Lum, and everyone at the Chinese Language School of Connecticut. You know, I wanted to send a shout-out to you and a thank you to my very good friend Sue Hill McClanahan for sponsoring my appearance last Sunday at the Chinese Language School of Connecticut's annual Chinese New Year celebration held on the campus of the University of Connecticut's downtown Stamford campus. A big shout-out goes to all of the school's volunteers, board members, teachers, staff, and community partners for making this celebration of the year of the rat a success. We enjoyed ourselves immensely with great food, great conversation, and so much more. Now, my friends, the Chinese Language School of Connecticut is committed to providing excellence in Chinese language instruction services. Its mission is to create and offer educational programs that enable learners to discover and develop an appreciation for the evolving richness of the Chinese language and culture. Now, the school seeks to serve as a bridge between its students and clients and the larger Chinese learning community community by offering Chinese language and culture programs, enrichment programs, tutoring services, homework support, corporate training and consultation services, and more. You can learn more about the Chinese Language School of Connecticut by going to ChineseLanguageSchool.org. Again, that's ChineseLanguageSchool.org, or you could call them at 1-866-301-4906. Again, that's 1-866-301-4906, and tell them I sent you. Thank you. Baldwin Chu and Larissa Lam have been guests on my show, and I just got word that they finally let the rat out of the bag, no pun intended. The world premiere of their new feature film, Far East Deep South, will be at the Cinequest Film Festival with screenings in San Jose and Redwood City, California. They're honored to be selected by this internationally recognized festival that was previously named number one film fest by USA Today. Baldwin and Larissa are so grateful for the platform this festival will give Far East Deep South. There will be three screenings of the film on March 7th, 8th, and 14th, so please mark your calendars. You can learn more at cinequest.org. That's spelled CINEQUEST.org. Now, some people have been asking them, what's the difference between the 14-minute short film Finding Cleveland and the new 75-minute film Far East Deep South, besides the length? Well, here's what they had to say. They said, think of this 75-minute film like a prequel and a sequel to Finding Cleveland. The first part of the film explores Charles Chu's immigration story on why he had to go find Cleveland. We will revisit the events of Finding Cleveland, but told in a new way and previously unseen moments from the trip. Then we uncover more significant and emotional revelations about Casey Liu and also learn about Casey's father, Charles J. Liu, when we meet more people who knew the family. We'll also learn about life in the segregated South from the Chinese and African Americans who lived there and how they coexisted in the face of racial discrimination. We'll also learn how the Chinese Exclusion Act directly impacted the Chiu and Liu family and led to their family separation. 80% of the film is brand new story, interviews, and revelations. We'll also have much higher production value on this new film. I'm looking forward, by the way, to welcoming both Baldwin and Larissa back to the show. You can learn more, my friends, by going to findingcleveland.com. You'll be glad you did. Last Thursday evening, on January 24th, it was the eve of the Lunar New Year, we received very heartbreaking news from NBC News in New York City. They reported that officials at New York City's Museum of Chinese in America said on Friday that they feared a fire at a building that houses many of 85,000 pieces of their collections had been destroyed. Now, there was a fire at 70 Mulberry Street. It's a former public school in Chinatown. It did not appear to send flames into the museum's second floor storage area, but damage from water sprayed on upper floors could be irreparable. And that was said by Nancy Yao Mosbach, who is the museum's president. Now, the museum used this portion of the building to store donated collections of Chinatown postcards, Chinese American newspapers, family albums, documents about the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, and letters home from lonely bachelor immigrants, and so much more. Now, the 40-year-old museum is located a few blocks away from the burned building and often used copies of documents and artifacts in its exhibits to keep the original safe in 70 Mulberry Street. Now, the extent of the damage wasn't immediately clear because firefighters and city officials weren't allowing anyone to the property. It was not considered very, very safe. Now, the Museum of Chinese in America in New York City released the following statement. I'd like to read it to you. It said, "Thank you for your thoughts and prayers as we attempt to recover artifacts from the fire that has devastated MoCA's archives at 70 Mulberry Street. Now, for 40 years, MoCA has preserved and protected 85,000 artifacts. Those artifacts are now in jeopardy. In response to your overwhelming support and inquiries as to how you can help, we welcome your support as we anticipate a long road ahead." Now, on January 29th, the museum updated its statement and said the following. It said, "We recovered at least 100 boxes from our archives with artifacts that appeared salvageable, but these are a fraction of the the entire collection. Mocha understands more fully the extraordinary expense and work to repair, recover, and rebuild its collections and archives. Now, the Museum of Chinese in America has announced that New Jersey-based ComRise will generously match dollar for dollar all funds raised for Mocha Archives Fire Recovery via the museum's GoFundMe campaign. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this company that has stepped up to the plate here. It's headquartered in New Jersey since 1984. ComRise is a staffing, consulting, and enhanced search technology company focused on customer satisfaction, innovation, and flexible workforce solutions. ComRise's clients consider us the bridge to first-rate talent for organizations that recognize the value of their workforce. With locations in the USA, China, and Hong Kong, ComRise helps its clients reach far and wide for both local and international resources, which yield the highest return on their human capital investments. ComRise provides high-quality executive search, temporary assignments, temporary to permanent opportunities, and cross-border placement services. And you can learn more, my friends, by going to comrise.com. That's spelled ComRise.com. Now, my friends, to volunteer for the recovery effort, please email the museum at firerecovery@mochanyc.org. They say, we continue to compile a list of volunteers and resources for recovery. Once we assess the condition of our archives, we will better know what our immediate needs are and we'll reach out. Now, this is good news. As of Friday, January 31st, the GoFundMe campaign has raised $110,240 in the past 6 days. And please, I urge you, my friends, to please do your part as well. Please stay up to date and support the Museum of Chinese in America, New York City, at this difficult time by going to mocanyc.org. Again, that's the Museum of Chinese in America in New York City. Go to mocanyc.org.
Welcome to Conversations with Jeffrey Bingham Mead, your host.
I first had a conversation with Nancy Yao Mosbach back in July of 2016 when I was the host of the Marvels of China Pathways to the Pacific Rim show. I went back into my archives and found that conversation, and today I'm going to just feature some excerpts of that. My friends, I really want you to get to know the Museum of Chinese in America in New York City's Chinatown in Manhattan because of the terrible circumstances that just arose from the fire over at its facility over on Mulberry Street. So, without any further ado, let's turn this over and let's learn about the Museum of Chinese America from its president, Nancy Yao Mosbach.
The Museum of Chinese in America is actually in its 36th year.
Wow.
So as anyone who knows Chinese culture, that's three turns of the 12 animal zodiac. So we are a monkey. We are in the monkey year.
Oh, good.
And we have, we're feeling it's going to be a very strong year, as it's been shown. And we have been in our new space about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
We were originally started 36 years ago as actually the New York Chinatown History Project.
Oh, yes.
Right. And that was the co-founders were Jack Chen and Charlie Lai, mm-hmm. actually two individuals who I've seen very close to the museum. Jack Chen is now a professor at the New York University, mm-hmm. and Charlie Lai is the executive director of a local nonprofit that works with immigrant and social services. So the two of them, incredible young men at the time, were self-called dumpster divers. So what do they mean by that?
Yeah.
Yes. They were so passionate about the history in Chinatown, New York, and some of the businesses, you know, turning hands sort of in that 70s and 60s period,
yeah.
that they would see dumpsters in front of these businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the dumpsters would be the incredible signs of, you know, hand laundry signs, some of the early businesses that Chinese immigrants had to take on,
right.
Given a limited number of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to start salvaging these items.
Wow.
Yes. So fast forward 36 years. What they did was salvage those items. Mocha now has a collection of over 65,000 items. We just received a national grant
mm-hmm.
from the Archives, National Archives, NHBRC,
right.
To help digitize 20,000 of those items.
Wow.
And we moved into this new space, rebranded, if you will, mm-hmm. and called ourselves the Museum of Chinese in America, and have moved to this inspired space Maya Lin designed about 10 years ago, and now have just, you know, they remain deeply involved. That original idea was that this museum would always be a dialogic museum. So when you go through the space and you witness the immigration story of Chinese in America, there's a conversation. Sometimes you'll feel some discomfort. You'll recognize some of the periods in time which may have seemed quite challenging.
Oh, yes.
For early immigrants, mm-hmm. Transcontinental Railroad,
oh, yeah.
stereotypes and racism in Hollywood, mm-hmm. The laundry and the restaurants that so many Chinese had to take on right. because there were no other forms of employment. So it's been a long journey, but one that we're excited to share with the broader community.
Yes. I'll tell you, I've been to your location on Center Street, and you mentioned that, of course, about Maya Lin. So tell us about your location on Center Street. And again, I understand it was designed by architect Maya Lin, who came to fame at age 21 years ago as the designer of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. That's amazing.
It's amazing. Yes. And she's incredible.
Yes.
And you know, she's... We're so blessed to have her in our life. She still serves on the board of the museum.
Uh-huh.
And yes, and actually Architectural Digest just recently named the museum one of Maya Lin's most memorable designs.
Yes, I can imagine so, yes.
Can you imagine? So she really designed it as a mm-hmm. space, and if any visitor comes, I always take them to her starting point in the museum,
yes.
Which is looking over the courtyard.
Right.
So she came into this space a little over 10 years ago, and this used to hold machinery equipment, large equipment. If anyone knows Center Street, you know, back in the day, there really wasn't a lot of reason to come down Center Street.
Right.
It was housing, just equipment. There were some frozen seafood vendors and the like. But she went into the space, oil spills, equipment all over, but there was this brick courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, this is where the museum needs to be. This is reminiscent of the Chinese courtyards mm-hmm. in China,
yes.
where families would play in the middle of the courtyard, and then they'd retreat to their respective locations outside of the courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly how the chronology of the Chinese immigration story follows that path around the courtyard.
Right.
From 1410 until the current day.
Of course, it used to be at a at another location over Mulberry Street. Your previous gallery space was there. And now I understand it serves as a research and archival center. So I was wondering if you could share with me and the audience, tell us about what it offers and what that space provides.
Yes, and that 70 Mulberry is the genesis of the museum, so
yes.
we're so proud of that space. It's about 2,000 square feet,
right.
And our very very professional collection is there. We have a formal accession and deaccession strategy, mm-hmm. again, received a national grant for that work.
Right.
And it is really a place where one can examine the collections, guided, of course. We have a research center.
Mm-hmm.
So we've received and fielded calls from UC Berkeley recently,
mm-hmm.
National University of Singapore,
yes.
and said, you're the only institution that has this entire collection of the first Chinese American newspaper.
Right.
You're the only museum that has this collection of oral histories, and so forth and so on. So we really have become a center for the American studies, and specifically Chinese American studies.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, and you know, we're open there in that location from 9 to 5,
mm-hmm.
But we are actually creating space at the main Center Street location mm-hmm. where you can access through Past Perfect and Archive Space our collections.
Oh wow!
We'll have 8 terminals set up in about 2 months' time. Really launching it for the school year, since we have so many graduate students and college university students who do this type of research, that are really going to find it a wonderful resource, and also searching for genealogy. As many have found the challenges of searching their own family ancestry, just given the phonetic spelling, the Chinese character, sometimes Chinese names were changed mm-hmm. because papers were bought. So there's a lot of complication and hurdles, as many immigrants have faced. But we do want to be a resource for individuals searching for their genealogy.
I was reading that Smithsonian Magazine has described your museum's collection as, and I quote here, a cultural rescue mission to save a little-known immigrant heritage. So, excuse me, I was wondering if you would describe for me and the audience, you know, those collections that that you mentioned and that you have.
Absolutely. And I like that quote very much.
Yeah.
It does really, it reminds me of Jack Chen and Charlie Lai.
Yes.
Because what they really created 36 years ago was a rescue mission, mm-hmm. and they saw value in the Chinese immigrant, you know, artifacts. And I think that seems very obvious today when we're all so grateful for our ancestry and the fact that we are a mosaic of cultures.
Yes.
But I don't think it was always the case.
Yes.
And they really went against the tide and took risks mm-hmm. to salvage and rescue so many important artifacts.
Right.
And things like, we have the largest collection of Chinese restaurant menus.
Oh,
Chinese
wow.
American restaurant menus. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. The other aspect that we're going to launch actually this time next year is what an exhibit of handicrafts, folk art, mm-hmm. called Fly to Freedom.
Yes.
As many of you might remember, the Golden Venture docked off Howard Beach, sort of in the Kennedy Airport area, mm-hmm. in 1993, and there were about 250 Fujianese illegal immigrants who were on that boat.
Yes.
And they were detained. Mm-hmm. When they were detained for a number of months, sometimes up to a year, they created some handicrafts mm-hmm. of this incredible work of using scraps of paper or using whatever they could find
right.
to create symbolic art that represent their hopes for their future life in America.
Mm-hmm.
There's a golden eagle. There's the boat that they rode on.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many aspects of their hopes and journeys. So similar and reminiscent of immigrants who went to Angel Island.
Oh, yes.
In the early part of the 1900s and late 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And that collection is one of a kind. We have well over 150 pieces of art, and that will be exhibited next summer.
Wow.
And then we have over 450 oral histories.
Mm-hmm.
We just completed 32 oral histories of major Chinese American chefs.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone from Martin Yan, as you might remember, Yan King
Cook.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And his story, Peter Chang, who used to work at the Chinese Embassy in D.C., now has a very popular chain of restaurants in Maryland and Virginia.
Uh-huh.
To Cecilia Zhang, sort of the mother, a Chinese chef in America,
mm-hmm.
And so many others
right.
that we've taken down their influences and tried to understand what their Chinese-American legacy is.
So what kind of resources do you provide educators, and are those just for educators and teachers here in the New York metropolitan area? Is it nationwide or even international?
I love educators.
Well, thank you. On behalf of us all, we say shishé, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I think what we're recognizing from the teachers and the feedback that we get from those who visit, that sometimes curriculums, and especially in the tri-state area, which is, I guess, the visitorship,
yes.
there needs to be some supplemental,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the areas of fourth grade, some
yes.
in the area of social studies. We see over 15,000 young people each year.
Right.
So tri-state area predominantly. And on top of that, we have a number of programs, professional development for educators, so that they can bring it back into the classroom.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then they can tell 30 people type of thing.
Sure.
But we are ecstatic that we just received our first National Endowment for the Humanities grant. And that's going to be a two-week intensive symposium that was competitively selected educators from all over the country
mm-hmm.
to be part of an intensive on Chinese Exclusion Act. But we also, what we do is this intensive social studies supplement. But on top of that, you know, the research component is good for older-aged students.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have sort of the interest education points.
Right.
Every day at 10:30, we have a Chinatown walking tour.
Mm-hmm.
So the history of New York City captured in this area is of huge interest to tourists, visitors. We have 60 million visitors to the city each year.
Yes, yes.
And also to the community, because they're not that familiar with Chinatown before it was Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And the history in this area, from the Native American village to the Dutch colonialists mm-hmm. to, you know, to the early part of the 1800s, there's so much going on in this area, and they think it's always been Chinatown, mm-hmm. and that's not the case.
What are some of the noteworthy exhibitions that you feature, both past and present?
Tyrus Wong was an incredible exhibit we just wrapped up. Tyrus Wong is 104 years old.
Oh, my.
And he attended the opening. He came back a couple of other times,
mm-hmm.
and we did honor him. Tyrus Wong is someone every American should know. He transformed Disney Animation was the creator, artistic creator for Bambi. So if many of us remember Disney's work,
yes,
animation, which is before Bambi, I think we saw a lot more of the Mickey Mouse, Disney's crew, very much that image of those Disney, Mickey and Minnie, those cartoonish black marker type of drawings.
Right.
But Tyrus Wong really brought in the aesthetic of the Chinese landscape and brushwork. And so when he, when Disney at the time, the studios had, you know, historically and admittedly been a bit racist during the time Tyrus was really developing some of his work, didn't really fully get acknowledged for really transforming Disney Animation.
Yeah.
But subsequently, the Disney, you know, the Disney Museum has been incredibly you know, generous with their accolades for what Tyrus Wong has done for that stage design by Ming Cho Lee.
Yes.
Again, a name that should be common in our you know, New York City history. And he is the dean of American set design, the dean of American theatrical design.
Right.
He has been teaching at the Yale School of Drama for 45 years. He has worked at the Shakespeare Festival for 11 years, 22 different sets, and has really just transformed American set design. And his current exhibit is up now in our space and will run through September. And he received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Tonys a few years ago. And has just extraordinary, extraordinary stage design, almost of a profound architectural component to all of his work. And
fantastic.
And that's on view, and that has been received with great, great review.
Very good. Now, your Legacy Awards Gala has honored those benefactors and builders who have made significant achievements. And we have very little time left, but who are some of them, and what have they done?
Absolutely. And now we always are very careful and selective about those we honor, that they have really pioneered the space that they're in. And they've also, you know, gone through that journey of understanding their identity and their ancestry.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example. Last year, we had the wonderful opportunity to honor Nancy Kwan. You may recall was Susie Wong in the world of Susie Wong.
Really
pioneering, pioneering roles that there are so few roles given to Asian Americans, and she really was a pioneer in Hollywood. The CV Star Scholars, the foundation that CV Star saw, started to give to scholars of Chinese ancestry, and then those individual scholars have gone on to lead the way in so many different ways. We've also honored Michael Bloomberg for his incredible support of understanding the Chinese-American journey and giving us encouragement for all that we've done. And then also, you know, individuals have really just pioneered in so many different areas in different spaces. David Henry Huang, William Louis, the renowned architect, and the list goes on. So each year we try to recognize three.
Wow.
We're on our officially on our 16th Legacy Award.
Okay. Now, where and how can the public learn more about the Museum of Chinese in America? How can they join and how do they contact you?
You can easily go to our website, www.mocanyc.org. That's MOCANYC.org.
But my friends, you just heard a conversation that I had with Nancy Yao Mosbach in 2016. She is the president of the Museum of Chinese in America in New York City. And again, you can learn more about this wonderful organization at mocanyc.org. I got to tell you, we are pretty much almost out of time. I wanted to let you know that the Museum of Chinese in America is having Chinese New Year festivities today. Please go show your support and tell them that I sent you, of course. And please, let's turn around and pool our resources together and help this wonderful institution of Chinese and Chinese American history, culture, and art to come back from this terrible tragedy that happened last week. Well, you know who I am. My name is Jeffrey Bingham Mead, and unfortunately, we are almost out of time. You've been listening to the February 1st, 2020 broadcast of Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead here on Radio 1490 WGCH in Greenwich, Connecticut, USA, and WGCH.com anywhere via live global streaming over the internet. Remember, you can learn more about us at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com and contact me anytime at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. As I close, please keep those in China and the rest of the world who have been affected by the coronavirus in your prayers and in your hearts. Let's pull together, okay? We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye now.